The World Health Organization recently released two health advisories related to artificial sweeteners. In May, the WHO recommended against the use of non-sugar sweeteners for the goal of reducing body weight. And earlier this month, the International Agency for Research on Cancer classified the artificial sweetener aspartame as possibly carcinogenic to humans. Dr. Francesco Branca, who directs the Department of Nutrition and Food Safety at the World Health Organization, said most people do not consume enough aspartame to be at risk, but the finding shows a need for further research.
We are comfortable that the occasional level of exposure, which is far from the acceptable daily intake, is safe or is not producing appreciable health risk. The problem is for high consumers, and the problem is for situations where and consumption are shifting towards high consumer. But I think our results do not indicate that occasional consumption should pose a risk to most consumers.
The FDA says it still considers aspartame safe for human consumption under current regulations. So what's a consumer to do with this information? You can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions or concerns do you have about natural or artificial sweeteners? Do you avoid some or all of them? Do you feel like some affect you differently than others? Do you like artificial sweeteners maybe better than regular sugar? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Stephanie Olivier Van Stichelen, is an assistant professor of biochemistry at Medical College of Wisconsin. Her lab researches natural and artificial sweeteners and how they influence pregnancy, development, and metabolism. Stephanie, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
Now, first of all, with this news from the World Health Organization, it seems like, okay, a little concern, need for no research. It doesn't seem like anybody's saying we should be panicking about our artificial sweeteners right now. Does that feel about right to you?
Yeah, exactly. I think that's exactly the take-home message of this. The World Health Organization is calling for more basic research on aspartame. There was some alarming study, and I think that's what this report was filled in the first place. But it's really, for now, at least, we really do not have enough evidence based on the amount of person that were assessed in those study. We do not have statistical power to say that there is for sure a risk. And so we just need to do a lot more to be able to assess that.
You do a lot of research related to artificial sweeteners, and we'll get into that. But first of all, can you tell us, what are they? What goes into making aspartame that makes it a sweetener that we can use?
Yeah, so there's as you mentioned, there's different category of artificial sweeteners and natural sweeteners. So we differentiate them by the fact that either they're man-made, so they were created by us. They do not exist in natural form in nature, versus natural sweeteners such as stevia, monk fruit, who are actually found in plants, naturally found in plants and extracted from it. Artificial sweeteners are made and just have been found to taste sweet, and compared to natural sugar, which is our common table sugar, for example, we do not get any calories from it. So they've been advertised for not having any effect on our blood sugar, for example. They just are good to taste sweet for us, but that's it. They do not trigger any metabolic response from it.
Which seems a little weird. What do we know about what our body is doing with, say, aspartame?
Yeah, so there's also subcategories in those artificial sweeteners. So aspartame is a separate case almost from all of the other artificial sweeteners. Aspartame is actually break down by our body and makes other molecules, including phenylalanine, methanol, and so aspartame, this is what it does, but neither of those molecules makes a caloric input. So it doesn't transform artificial sweeteners into a sugar that we can actually make energy from or store as fat, for example, or do anything else. And all of the other sweeteners, so we know saccharine, for example, like Sweet and Low brand, sucralose, like Splenda, all of those are actually intact molecule. They're called inert. And so they do travel our body, but we don't break them down into anything else. So they are excreted the same way we ingest them.
Now, you mentioned aspartame breaks down into phenylalanine. Now, there's the condition of, what is it, phenylketonuria, that people are supposed to avoid that. Are people with PKU, phenylketonuria, they should avoid aspartame? Is that right?
Yeah, so that's been recommended by the FDA a while ago, as soon as it was almost put into food. This condition is a rare genetic disease where people cannot break down phenylalanine, and they build up phenylalanine in their body and becomes toxic. And so usually what we recommend for those people is to get on a low phenylalanine diet. They should monitor really their phenylalanine input. And so they are one of the category where they do not they should not have aspartame at all in their diet.
Talking to Stephanie Olivier Van Stichelen, Assistant Professor of Biochemistry at Medical College of Wisconsin, looking at aspartame, other artificial sweeteners. You could join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions for our guest, your thoughts on artificial sweeteners. Do you use them instead of sugary stuff? Do you avoid them? Join in at 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Stephanie, this is a big subject of your research, including with during pregnancy. What kind of things are you looking at when it comes to artificial sweeteners?
Yeah, so my laboratory, we're interested in actually we're not really looking into aspartame. We're actually looking at two other sweeteners called sucralose and acesulfame potassium. And so those two sweeteners are the most commonly combination in diet sodas, for example. So every single diet soda you find out there usually have both sweeteners in there. And so what we are looking at is actually potentially what the effect could be during pregnancy. So if a mother would drink artificial sweeteners during pregnancy, and the effect on the offspring. So I'm a basic scientist, I'm a biochemist. So we look mostly, we mimic human model in more simple models. So animal models, usually rodent. And so we feed pregnant them artificial sweeteners, and we're looking at what the offspring have or have not, or if it's safe for pregnant women to consume.
And one big point I've seen you make elsewhere in other interviews is you'd like to see a lot more research into artificial sweeteners and what they do in our bodies and whether we pass them along. What other kind of research are you hoping to see, whether you're doing it or others around the country?
Yeah, so one other thing we've come to appreciate in our research is that we know that artificial sweeteners are safe for general population. One of the things we are starting to understand, the same way as you mentioned for the PKU patient, is that there may be some specific condition in which artificial sweetener might not be as recommended. One of the things that we are also looking at, for example, is it's a combination of artificial sweeteners consumption and something else. So let's say you would be on a heavy drug treatment, on chemotherapy, those kind of things. So do we have interaction between sweeteners and other drug, and our body cannot handle as much because of artificial sweeteners? And the same way as pregnancy, as I was saying, there's a lot to do with the offspring, the babies are a developing metabolism. And so they are trying to build up all their mechanism to store glucose properly to create energy from nutrient. And having sweeteners at that time, it's kind of a hard take, because now we're training a body to say, well, this is a sweet, but it doesn't have any caloric input, which is not a normal response. And so that's kind of like where the realm where we're trying, we definitely need a lot more research to understand if it's really a good thing or not to consume during early life or pregnancy.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Cyril is with us in Madison. Cyril, hi.
Hi there. I'm enjoying your conversation. I'm a nutritionist by trade, although I'm not practicing anymore. But the PKU, phenylketonuria, is a really serious issue. And I know aspartame has been a big part of that for years and years. And actually, I'm holding a bottle of Diet Coke in my hand right now. And it does have a warning, which is not very prominent on the label, saying fetal ketonuric contains phenylalanine, which is, like I say, it's there, but it's not very prominent. And it has other sweeteners in it which sort of dilutes the importance of the other one actually being there.
Gotcha. Thanks. Cyril, thanks a lot for the call. Stephanie, a couple big labeling questions there. First of all, given the risk to a part of the population, should that warning be, as Cyril seems to be suggesting, more prominent?
Yeah, so it is. So for people with PKU, they've been diagnosed really early on. This is something that showed up really quickly at birth, and it's part of the screening also, early birth screening in Wisconsin particularly. They should know they would not consume. So I'm expecting those that are really have PKU diagnosed, they would know not to consume those. So that's, I think that's fine. The labeling of artificial sweeteners is tricky in a sense that people sometimes do not recognize what a sweetener is or not. So sucralose, for example, sounds a lot like sucrose, which is our natural sugar. So 3 in 4 people cannot actually identify properly sweeteners on label. The other trick that that is on those labels is that we don't really know how much we have. So if you look at a food label or a drink label, you have a list of additives that were put on there, or like glucose. Sometimes you have vitamins, minerals, something like this. And then it starts with the higher amount and then it finished by the lower amount. But we don't really know what that amount is. And it's not required to put any amount of artificial sweeteners. So that's kind of a problem, both in research for us, because how do you assess how much a person actually consume a day? The only thing we can say is pretty much they're a frequent user, so they would do every day or not, and kind of how much diet soda they drink, something like this. But that's pretty much it. So it's hard also for consumer to assess how much they are drinking or if they are within the guideline of the FDA, for example.
Thanks a lot for that call. We're talking to Stephanie Olivier Van Stichelen, Medical College of Wisconsin biochemistry professor, looking at natural and artificial sweeteners and how they affect our health after the World Health Organization issued not a panic type warning, but saying, hey, they're possibly carcinogenic for humans. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts, your questions. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with Stephanie Olivier Van Stichelen, biochemistry professor at Medical College of Wisconsin, with us today for a look at recent news about artificial sweeteners. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Stephanie, before we go back to our callers, I want to talk about this World Health Organization statement. You know, aspartame possibly carcinogenic for humans. That sounds bad. But there's other categories: carcinogenic, probably carcinogenic, possibly, and non. A lot of the things we encounter in our lives might fit into possibly or more carcinogenic.
Yeah, exactly. So they did classify. So we're just one category into kind of the carcinogenic. So it is. It is everything in that category, usually stuff that have been submitted somehow to the WHO as a report with some studies, some basic research that have been done, and that would go into that category. So there's a lot of stuff potentially that could end up in this. And again, it is clear that the statement is that we need more research to be able to conclude this. So it is kind of a to-watch category.
Let's go back to our callers now. Ethan is with us in Madison. Ethan, hi.
Hi. I'm curious if consuming artificial...
I think we lost our connection with Ethan. Ethan, our producer says, was interested in whether these artificial sweeteners affect insulin response. Stephanie, what is there an impact on insulin response from consuming artificial sweeteners?
So the original idea was that sweeteners do not impact insulin response. Now, after a couple years of research now, like decades, I would say, of research now, we know that they do bind the sweet receptor, and you have sweet receptor all over your body. That's something that usually people don't think about, but we do have sweet taste receptor in our gut, for example. This is one of the places where sweetener will bind and signal to our intestine and then and our body that there is nutrient coming, there's sugar coming. And a sweet receptor cannot make the difference between a sugar and a non-nutrient sweetener or aspartame or anything. So the response to this is to secrete hormone in the gut that will signal to ingest sugar and then metabolize it and then go with the normal sugar response. One of this normal sugar response is secretion of insulin, so we can ingest properly our glucose and then store it. So we know in we know sweeteners impact the gut response for sure. The insulin, we're still a little bit in between. I think we still need more study for this, but it definitely does signal in the gut pretty well. As far as the downstream of insulin, so increase in glucose concentration that is linked to insulin resistance, for example, this has been shown with sweeteners. So we know that long-term sweeteners exposure lead to increased basal glucose level, which is your blood sugar that would signal you for pre-diabetic.
Thanks a lot for that call. Sorry we lost the connection. William joins us now in Marshall. William, hello.
Good afternoon.
What did you want to bring up, William?
I would like to ask about the value of alcohol sugars or sugar alcohols in terms of, you know, whether they have that same response with the effect of the insulin. And also, do you have a website where we can go and read up on the man's work?
You mean on our guest research, William?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, William, thanks. First of all, alcohol sugars.
Yeah, so alcohol sugar are regulated as well by the FDA, but they're not as sweet as our nutritive sweeteners, and that's part of why they're not used as much. They're also not as cheap as produced, so we don't have as much. But like as far as what we know, they bind this receptor, but not as good as, let's say, sucralose or aspartame, and that's make them less sweet for us. There's not a ton of sugar on research story on sugar alcohol like sorbitol and all of this and their effects. The fact that they're found mainly in really small quantity and really particular product like gum, for example, we're not expecting to ingest as much as, you know, drinking diet sodas. So I think that's part of why we don't have as much research on it. But yeah, so far so good. Let's put it this way.
And William was wondering if there's a good place to follow your research, Stephanie.
I have a website. You can find me on Medical College of Wisconsin website, and there's a lot of links on my research.
Thanks for the call. And I know we've had some people wonder also about non-artificial sweetener alternatives, things like stevia. Where do they fit into all of this? Is this part of what you research?
Yeah, so my own research, we haven't looked at stevia, but others have done it. One of the things that came out semi-recently was that they have fed patients with various quantity of stevia, and they haven't found any effect on glucose level, for example, while they did find some effect on basal, on blood sugar with saccharine and sucralose. So there is some research, but stevia is also a lot newer, like as a you know, really good substitute for artificial sweeteners. They have been used for a lot longer stevia was used a lot longer by Chinese, and we haven't seen anything. They do have the same concept as far as their binding, and they bind this receptor. One of the major differences is our gut microbiome actually participate in metabolizing the stevia a little bit. And so that makes our gut microbiome work. In which way, I don't think we're sure yet. But so far, we don't have a ton of research on stevia. We have a lot more on aspartame and sucralose, for example.
Time for one more caller. Ken is with us in Black River Falls. Ken, hi.
Yeah, hello. You know, something that I was wondering about is artificial flavors. For years, I've wondered what chemists sat around figuring out, let's take these things and we'll come up with artificial vanilla. That seems impossible to even imagine doing. The other thing is, we don't really have any basic information or education when it comes to what we should be eating. I mean, I cannot imagine why I would want an artificial sweetener. If I want sugar, I'll have sugar, but I usually don't want sugar. And we have very little education on this, just none.
Ken, thanks a lot for the call. Stephanie, if he wants sugar, he'll have sugar. Of course, we know there's downsides to having too much sugar in our lives, too. What do you end up doing in your own life, Stephanie, when it comes to how much and what sweeteners to actually use?
Yeah, so I'm definitely not going with too much sugar. That's another part of my lab research is the effect of regular sugar. So I definitely do not, and there's like really strong evidence that too much sugar doesn't help with, again, a lot of the metabolic disease, including obesity and diabetes. So definitely not in my own life. I'm not going full on regular sugar. I do use artificial sweeteners in really moderate concentration, the same way as the FDA advice. And I'm actually happy there's other alternatives now in the market, including seltzers that are naturally flavored and with really minimal sugar. And I think our the same way as we train for salts, in a sense, we are good at training for sweet. So the less sweet we eat, usually the better we get with not craving for sweet. So I think we can train our body to do that.
Ken, thanks for the call. And Stephanie, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you.
Stephanie Olivier Van Stichelen is an assistant professor of biochemistry at Medical College of Wisconsin. She's with us today to explain what we know and don't know about the ways natural and artificial sweeteners influence our health. She had an interesting point there. We can train ourselves to not like sweets as much or not to crave them as much. The less we eat, the less sweet stuff we want. Well, in theory, I haven't been able to do that in my life. How about you? Have you made a decision in your life to cut back on sweets and sweeteners, whether sugar or stevia or sucralose or you name it? Let us know about it. Let me know about it. Maybe I can learn from it. Email ideas@wpr.org. That's ideas@wpr.org.